What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast wishing it could keep its sheets as clean as Burnley's. Coming up, Eustace, you have a problem as John swaps promotion push for relegation battle. We'll round up the best of the midweek action and look ahead to the weekend's games. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back with you and on in our usual time slot as well, keeping good time at the moment as we motor towards the business end of the EFL season. It's me, Matt Davis Adams. I'm joined, as always, by my two podcasting pals. How are you doing, Adrian Clark?
I'm all right. Yeah, very good. Yeah, another busy week. It was good to see Sam in real life, in the flesh on Monday. And it's just a little reminder. I've just got to sort of warn myself whenever I know I'm going to bump into Sam in real life, just don't be quite as scruffy. Just put on slightly nicer clothes because he's just always well turned out, isn't he? He's annoying. Thanks, in that respect.
I've completely forgotten. That shows you my current state of mind that I'd seen Clarkie this week. I'm absolutely knackered as we sit.
Oh, cheers, mate. Yeah.
But I did listen to you briefly last night on your commentary game, and I did listen to Matt the other day on Reading Shrewsbury. But I hasten to add, I didn't last too long. On that one, I just listened to him announcing the teams, and then I switched on to more higher end EFL action.
Yeah, maybe I'll touch on that, but it wasn't a classic by any means.
Oh, you touch on it, Matt. Give us all the details.
All right. Before I do that, let me tell you that our partners Quinbet have an offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35 minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Queen Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus only, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for more information on responsible gambling. Well, it's been a busy week in the Championship. We'll round up the midweek action next. And in the Football League generally, albeit it's the Championship which has taken centre stage, the top four all won, as did Blackburn, who leapfrogged West Brom into fifth. We'll talk about Leeds later. Sheffield United with a big victory as well. But Adrian, as we've alluded to, you were on co-commentary duty for Burnley's latest win to nil. They beat Hull by 2-0, becoming the first team in Championship history to keep 10 consecutive clean sheets. I mean, that's worth repeating, isn't it? Because it is nuts.
Yeah, it's absolutely awesome, and I really wanted them to do it. And it was only really late on that Hull sort of gave them one or two little scares, but nothing major. It never truly looked in doubt. So yeah, it's a great achievement. Absolutely brilliant. No team ever in the second tier, 10 clean sheets on the spin. It is fantastic. I've got to say that they really impressed me. I've seen Burnley on some good days actually this season. I think I've been quite a lucky charm for them, and this was another one. Really good with and without the ball. I mean, with it, some of the patterns they weaved were tremendous. There was lovely triangles, little overloads. I said in commentary, it looks like they've got an extra player. They always seem to find the spare man. They join the centre-backs in with a play. So Egan Riley and Estev, very high. And that just allows them to have a spare player somewhere. And they invariably found that player. Great combinations out wide between the fullbacks and wingers. In this game, Jadon Anthony was a bit special. Really, really dynamic. Every time he got the ball, he ran at McLaughlin, who I felt for, really. It must have been a long 90 minutes for him. Yeah, it was just very, very impressive. He was the standout, but I do think that all over the pitch, we're good players. I enjoyed the switches of play. I mean, there was just tons to admire about Burnley in the game. Just a few numbers. From 1-0 up now this season, 15 wins, 1 draw, no defeat. That from 1-0 up, they've scored 32 more goals and conceded 3. It's just scary. And obviously, we talked about the clean sheet record. But the thing is, in every single game this season, if they haven't kept a clean sheet, they've let in a max of 1 goal. I mean, there's just no one else around that can boast a record like that. So yeah, fair play to them. It was a terrific performance. For Hull weren't compact. They were a little bit too open. And it was only really when Louis Barry came on the left and João Pedro up front that they carried a bit more threat. It was a little bit of a tame performance from Hull. But yeah, I was really impressed with Carras.
Yeah, rightly. Burnley's defence in the spotlight, and everyone's talking about them, but Leeds haven't conceded in 6 now going into the the massive game on Monday against Sunderland, and they're getting obviously a lot of plaudits about their attacking play leads because they thumped 7 past Cardiff and obviously 4 against Watford in the week, but they're really good defensively as well. So they want a great run in that regard. And 4 teams at the top of the division now. I mean, I didn't realise that cushion was so great really until I started poring over the league table yesterday and this morning. So 4 teams, I wouldn't say run of the mill for Sheffield United, but the other 3 pretty comfortable victories in the midweek programme.
Yeah, it looks like there's just 2 playoff places up for grabs now. Sunderland beat Luton by 2-0. Sam, your old club Luton, I mean, they actually might go down. They're bottom of the table, albeit they're only 2 points from safety, and Derby just above the perforated line have played a game more. But the managerial change hasn't worked. They've got back-to-back home games against Sheffield United and the currently resurgent Plymouth to come. They're going to have to win one of those, aren't they?
It's really difficult to get your head around. It's probably really difficult to articulate exactly how they salvage this season. It almost feels to me like this is the start of a fresh campaign, almost the pre-season, because the style of play is obviously changing, evolving. It's a different formation, first and foremost, for Matt Bloomfield in comparison to how they were under Rob Edwards and Nathan Jones to a degree, because Rob Edwards didn't change much, and a number of new players as well. Number of young players given further opportunities by Matt Bloomfield. And this isn't a criticism, because, you know, the more experienced guys that haven't been doing the business have to come out at times, and you have to try and look for a different formula. And some of the guys that have been signed from lower divisions, Asgard from Wigan, Ali from Exeter, in the team last night at the Stadium of Light. So it may be going to take a little bit of time, but they're running out of that. So I don't know which way it's going to go. They need a kind of statement, signature victory to just give some confidence to the players and probably the support as well. Whether it comes against Sheffield United, I'm not so sure with their attacking quality. And I thought Sunderland were in third gear last night, really. Made a couple of changes. I think Ballard coming in for Mepham. Had a really good game defensively. They've looked a little shaky towards latter stages of fixtures recently, Sunderland, and have been burnt. Didn't see that at all last night. And again, I think Bellingham's importance just encapsulated by another fine display. When he's in the team, they don't lose invariably. So, yeah, comfortable win for Sunderland, who are looking very, very good as they hunt down the top 3.
Sam, yeah. I got a friend, and you know him, I won't say it on here, who's backed Luton to go down, and he did it at the start of the season, which I thought was quite frankly a ridiculous call, but he's looking quite smug at the minute. I mean, do you think, because I've been in denial that it will happen, do you think it actually could?
I think it could, yeah. I think we were all guilty, probably, of getting blinded a little bit by the Premier League season when you think of the journey that Luton have been on across the last 10, 15 years. They did amazingly well to get into the Premier League. And I think very quickly we realised that, you know, the mentality of some of the players was probably really tested early part of this campaign, readjusting back to life in the Championship. And I think it's gone on longer than anyone would have anticipated. But yeah, they're in trouble now. They are really in trouble, and I hope that Matt Bloomfield can start picking up some results. They've certainly got the squad to do it, haven't they? They've got the capability in their ranks. It's just so many players have been off colour for such large portions of the season. Is it going to flip now in time? He's got a massive job on his hands, and if he can achieve it, that'll be a real success for him. Bold move, I think, for him moving there, considering the continuity he would have got at Wickham, and I think a big decision for Luton to go with what in essence is someone still in the infancy of his career, rather than someone maybe to come in with that character to ruffle a few feathers. And I think on reflection, if it is to go the wrong way, that's something they'll have to live with, because I think surely there would have been the potential to go with someone with maybe a little bit more experience of these situations. But yeah, hopefully he's going to turn it around.
What's also counting against them is the form of others around them. Massive win for Plymouth against Millwall. Derby obviously got the new manager bounce they would hope to come. And also Adrian Pompey with a big win against Cardiff. This was on Tuesday night. And they are 18th going into the weekend's action, 4 points above the relegation zone. And if they're going to stay up, it is going to be based on what they do at Fratton Park, right? Because that's where 7 of their 8 wins have come.
Definitely, yeah. And I think they will stay up. I think think they've been really, really good there. Something about them. I think Messina, I'm pleased for him because he'd done so amazingly to get them there in the first place. The pressure he was under, I felt, was a bit unfair. And yeah, he's starting to sort of get them into a position of not safety yet, but more results like this and they'll get there. It was a huge game, really, really important. And they started it on fire, really did, didn't they? They tore at Cardiff, got themselves two up early on. Goals from Bishop and Shaughnessy. Two assists from Josh Murphy, who was absolutely the star of the show here. I'm pleased for him as well. I mean, I love a winger, you know that. But I think he's a real talent. I don't think there was much in it between him and his brother when they were younger. If anything, I think Josh was more highly rated than Jacob. So I felt for him last year that he's back in the third tier and he did great, didn't he, for Oxford, helped them get promoted. But yeah, I'm sort of chuffed for him that he's starting to deliver at championship level because I think he's good enough to be one of the best wingers at that level of the game. He was magnificent in this game. He had seven shots. He made five chances and he was everywhere. And Colby Bishop, I think, was a real standout as well. Top centre forward display from him. And yeah, it was. They've sort of found their style, haven't they? They've sacrificed a bit of the ball in these home games at Fratton Park. They're not obsessed by it. I think they had 40% against Cardiff, which might surprise some people, but I do think they're better at winning it, you know, being quite abrasive in that middle third and then going at teams really, really quickly through players like Murphy and Ritchie and Callum Lang. And yeah, they found their groove and top win, top performance. And the other thing that really caught my eye here was how angry Messina was. He wasn't happy at all with his team once they got two up. He said, we sat on it and it was poor. And he hooked the right back, Zach Swanson, who's been doing really well, hooked him at half time, which is quite a brutal thing to do. But every now and again, I think a manager's got to do that. A little bit of a shock tactic, even though it's harsh on the individual. When the team's flying at home, which they are, kind of, you don't want them to get complacent. So what he's done here is like, yeah, all right, we're winning, but that was crap. This was rubbish, blah, blah, blah. Bang, you're off. And he's just shaking up the team. So he's making sure that the standards stay really high.
It's what I do with these two, listener, off air every so often, just rattle a few cages. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere, Sam, Bristol City beating Stoke by 2-0. So Bristol City just a place and 2 points outside the playoffs. But I mean, you would have thought that Mark Robbins would have had a nice time at Ashton Gate against the Robins, but it's not quite happened for him yet, has it? And they're not safe either. 3 points from trouble. I mean, are we to deduce from this that Stoke City are just unsalvageable and nobody's ever going to get this right, or is he going to turn it around us?
Oh, it feels a little like that, doesn't it? I think it's a colossal match for them at the weekend against Swansea at home. You know, that's an unbelievable opportunity against a team that's been equally struggling to get a win and get some confidence. Bristol City, far and away the better side against Stoke. 0.36 XG for Stoke City in this defeat. Didn't have a shot on target. Max O'Leary was at fault, I thought, for the Swansea winning goal at Ashton Gate on Sunday. Not tested at all here. And I thought it was such a blow for Bristol City losing at home to Swansea in what felt like a massive game after the transfer window inactivity, loads of dissenting voices. So for them to lose the subsequent home game, I thought that would have such a negative effect on their opportunity of getting in the playoffs. So this was a hell of a result last night. And seeing Mometi back scoring, he was completely anonymous on Sunday. I think defensively, this is a pretty good outfit under Liam Manning. Had to reshuffle. Hayden Roberts played left-sided centre-half last night with McNally missing. McCrory came back in, who was sent off at Oxford. And those two were very, very good. Always like Rob Dickey at the heart of a defence. So they're not going to give up too many goals. It probably hinges on that number nine position, Armstrong or Wells, and obviously Twine and Mometi having consistency if they're gonna make it. So I just thought that was a massive result. Had they not taken maximum points last night, I think that could have probably been too much of a hammer blow. You know, let's say 1 point from two home games against beatable opposition to see the season maybe plateau. So big win for them to keep them, you know, very much in the playoff mix.
Let's head down to League One. We're going to talk about Cambridge later. But Adrian, give me a line on Birmingham, who beat them 4-0, as you would expect, I suppose, for a top v bottom clash. But as we'll talk about with another team in League One briefly, no FA Cup hangover here for Birmingham, who have got more than one foot back in the Championship at this stage.
No, yeah, they're cruising it. 7 points clear now, got a game in hand. They're 11 clear of third with a game in hand. So they're definitely going up, Birmingham, we know that. Played his strongest team here. Could easily have maybe seen this as a game I can rest a few after the Newcastle exploits, but he went for it and then got the job done really by half time. And then he brought off Iwata, who's a really good player in midfield, and put on Bielik. So good management, I think, from Chris Davis. Excellent performance. By the way, this is Birmingham's biggest league win at St Andrews since 2014. It was only 4-0. Like, they beat Reading, I think, 6-1 in December 2014. So, you know, the fans haven't seen that many tonkings, have they, in recent times? And not even this season, which is, you know, probably be surprising to some. They've just been more efficient, haven't they, than anything. So, well played them. I think Kieran Dowell has added a bit of quality, hasn't he? Real excellent pickup, I think, Dowell. He was really, really classy on the night. Scored a great goal. It's a beautiful team goal. I don't know if you've seen it. It started inside their own half. Beautiful combination. And then he finishes it with aplomb. I really like the fullbacks at Birmingham. I think they make them tick. Laird on the right was great. Great ball carrier. And Cochrane, someone that doesn't get a lot of sort of praise outside of St Andrews. I think he's a really consistent left back. It was good to see Pake come back into the team in central midfield. Pake and Iwata is a great combo for me. So yeah, lots to like about Birmingham City at the moment. I was looking at Keshi Anderson as well. I just wanted to shout out for him. Involved in the goals. What I like about him is that he'll carry the ball. And Birmingham, as we know, pass. That's what they do. You can't just have players that just want to pass it. You've got to have guys that want to travel with the ball as well and commit defenders. And I think in Anderson, probably Laird and Jay Stansford as well, they've got three guys that will just run at people. And that's what you call balance, where a manager gets the right balance in the team. You've got players that can do something a little bit different as well. So, yeah, brilliant from them again.
Can't believe you've done 2 minutes, Clarkie, and you've not mentioned the best own goal of the season.
Oh, it was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. Ian Bennett, sorry, mate. swept it into the corner from Akeshi Anderson, right
clean
wing cross.
Volley. Yeah.
Some horrible goals. I mean, Stansfield's penalties weren't the best, were they? The first one crept in.
Terrible.
Second one down the middle. With such a clean striker of the ball. Maybe it's funny that, isn't it? You know, some people aren't the best penalty takers despite being, you know, a wonderful striker. 700 passes to 200 passes, and I'm not a massive one on possession. And passes, but I think that encapsulates the gulf really that Birmingham have got to all the other teams they're operating alongside at the moment in League One. So
yeah,
matter of time for them.
The only other time that I ever blasted up, because I used to take penalties for pretty much
the only
everything.
Other time I blasted in an own goal from the edge of the 6 yard box.
Never got an hockey, thankfully. But with penalties, I took a lot of penalties. Only time I ever really went down the middle when I didn't feel good. I thought a bit edgy. That was the only time I'd go down the mid. And he did it for both goals, both efforts. One that went in, one was saved. And yeah, you're right. They were terrible pens.
What about Leighton Orient then? 3-0 win for them against Mansfield leaves them a couple of points outside the playoffs. They were so close, Sam, weren't they, to upsetting City. Somebody on this pod tipped Jamie Donnelly as a player to watch a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember who. You could talk about Orient if you like, or you could talk about Mansfield, who have absolutely collapsed. 7 defeats in a row in all competitions.
Yeah, the most eye-catching thing, other than a couple of beautiful finishes for Leighton Orient, was Aidan Flint getting taken off after 26 minutes. I don't know if you saw this, to be replaced by Elliot Hewitt. He was at fault possibly for one or two of the goals. He was involved kind of in all three. I wouldn't, you know, be harsh enough to say the second and the third was his individual mistake. But the first one, he loses Brown. The Leighton Orient midfield player gets away from him from a corner. So, I mean, that's a big call, isn't it? A leader, vast experience at the heart of that Mansfield defence. So Hewitt came on. Don't think there was an injury. And they went to a back four and obviously didn't ship any more goals, Mansfield. But yeah, this is a real fall off. And, you know, normally I think if you rewound the last 2 years of podcasts, me and Clarkie are probably united when we say kind of 6 straight defeats, 7 straight defeats. That's kind of the numbers when normally managers are under severe pressure and normally lose their roles. I don't think it probably would mean that for Nigel Clough. I think he's probably got too much cash in the bank, too much of a good relationship with the owners there. And
they're 10 points
so.
From trouble, aren't they? So, I mean, that's a decent...
Yeah, I heard a little bit of that sentiment the other day that he'd be in trouble. I don't really see that. It's just a difficult spell. He was quite pleased with the most recent home performance. And Leighton Orient are a really good side. Incredibly well set up. Good players they've added as well. Randall Williams obviously getting his first, I think, for the club. Kelman showed against Manchester City, and again, I think last night that he's a really good centre forward now. So they're a good side, and they're in incredible, incredible form. Won 10 of the last 13, only one defeat, and that was pre-City. So I think you can allow them that almost with the lads jostling for position to make sure they're in that side against Manchester City.
So as I mentioned, I did Reading against Shrewsbury on Tuesday night. Now, I am dreadful at our predictions, bottom of the pile by quite a long way, but I'll give you a prediction here for free. Shrewsbury are not going down. Absolutely no chance. Properly organised now. Should have won this game. John Marcus missed a first half penalty. Had by far the better of it. Looked a better side than Reading. Gareth Ainsworth seems to have got them ticking, and I think that they are going to be just fine. They are within touching distance now of Peterborough. 3 games unbeaten, having won a couple of those as well, and they've got 3 home games on the spin now to try and push a little bit further up the table. Looking to get into League One, Adrian, are AFC Wimbledon, and they are one of the form horses at the moment, aren't they? Just a point outside the automatic places, and they've got a game in hand on third place Bradford after they easily swept past Crewe. They're one of our favourite teams because Sam's Bezzy's with the manager, and everybody likes AFC Wimbledon, don't they? And another team with a brilliant defensive record at the moment too.
Yeah, they're just not conceding goals, are they? This was comprehensive, because Crewe are having a good season, a little bit of a bad week, Crewe. But yeah, look, if you look at Wimbledon, clean sheet there, clean sheet against Accrington, clean sheet Bradford. They played Crewe not so long ago at the other place and it was 1-1. The clean sheet at MK, clean sheet against Tranmere. So yeah, they're very, very solid, aren't they, AFC Wimbledon? And I think they've got a shot, haven't they, at promotion in what is, I still think, a very open League Two. Which way is it going to go? Walsall were running away with it, but their form has plateaued. And then it's just so even between Notts County, you can go all the way down to sort of Grimsby or Chesterfield, and any of those can get inside basically the top 10, could finish as could even be champions. There's no one really that doesn't have a chance. And for me, Wimbledon, because they're solid, because they've only let in 20 goals in 29 games, I think they've got a real shot here at automatic promotion, which I think would be a great achievement for Jacko. I know Sam went down the training ground, didn't you, the other week, just to have a little nosy. I don't know what you saw when you were down there that of interest. Was you impressed with what you saw?
Yeah, the intensity of training, honestly, and that, again, that feels like a little bit of a cliche, but it wasn't of that nature when I was playing 20 years ago. There were still a few that probably didn't put it in training, or would still get automatically picked at the weekend, irrelevant of their form on the training ground. They were all at it. And Jacko pointed towards the likes of Sam Hutchinson, Romain Sawyers, and maybe more pertinently right now, Marcus Brown, who I think in League Two, he could be the catalyst for AFC Wimbledon. No question, the difference maker if they're to get an automatic position. He's far too good for the level. Obviously, I think fitness has been a problem for him, and Jacko's been incredibly impressed with him. Saw some nice touches for him in this game against Crewe. Probably tactically, the one thing that has changed as the season's developed is they've played a lot more with two tens, with Marcus Brown obviously being one. However, for this game, Stevens and Bougill with Browning behind him. So that's a pretty good strike force, even though it's been kind of reconfigured there. Bougill takes all the knocks. Stevens is the goal scorer. And Brown's got real craft and real quality. So with that defensive record, they've put themselves in a brilliant position to get automatic.
Yeah, certainly looks that way. Big games coming up across the weekend, which we are going to preview shortly. But next, we're going to talk about one of the strangest decisions in the history of football. I'm only joking. John Eustace is the new Derby County manager, has decided to swap Blackburn in favour of a move to East Midlands, also runs Derby County. Sam, you know him well. I know that family's a big part of the thinking here. They're based in the East Midlands, but also, I mean, this is pretty damning of Blackburn. isn't it? You'd have to say. Obviously, they responded nicely with a great win and they're in the playoff places. But if you think a team that is in danger of getting relegated to League One is a better long-term prospect than one who might get promoted, then that doesn't speak well to Venky's and co.
Yeah, and I think that's been the general sentiment amongst the Blackburn supporters. You know, disappointed, of course, that he's chosen to leave for a team in the lower reaches of the Championship, but more, I suppose, unhappiness at the way their club's been run over a long period of time, probably the uncertainty of exactly what's going on, you know, behind the players that go out on the pitch. So none of us know. And it's, you know, I said to you over the message in the last couple of days, none of us know exactly what goes day in, day out at a club. And John Eustace clearly feels that this is a better job for him in terms of his career prospects. That's the bottom line. And that's not even without putting in to mix his family, I presume, still being in the Birmingham area. The fact that he played at Derby at the latter stages of his career really successfully. They love him there. So you have that attraction as well. You have the fact that he signed a 3.5-year contract when he only had maybe 18 months to run at Blackburn and no agreement with a longer deal in place. So when you add all those things up, you kind of get it. I'm talking after Blackburn have won at West Brom and are in an amazing position to get in the playoffs. So you have to add that balance. The reality is there's a huge gulf probably between the top four teams in the Championship at the moment and the others. So it would be a hell of an achievement for one of the teams to get promoted via the playoffs. I think the likelihood is that Blackburn will still be in the Championship next season. And now he's going to have to go in Derby and do a bit of a salvage job. They're not scoring goals. There is no guarantee that he's going to go into Derby and they're going to stay in a division. So it's a huge risk. They could be in League One next season, but I think the long-term picture at Derby is pretty rosy. And if he can get them going, get those fans on side, you know, they could be a real powerhouse again, probably in the second tier, but it's going to be something that's going to take a little bit of time.
Interesting, Clarky, just looking at the runners and riders to replace Eustace at Blackburn, heavy favourite by a long way is Lee Carsley. I mean, whoever gets it, it's a really attractive job in terms of the league position, isn't it? You don't often come into a club that are fifth in the table. Obviously, people might have their reservations about the ownership, but you would suspect that there's going to be plenty of applicants anyway.
Definitely. Yeah, of course there will be, yeah, because they're a decent team. But yeah, I think the fact that he's walked out on Rovers for Derby would be a red flag for me if I was a potential manager, especially Lee Carsley, who's in a nice job, isn't he, at the FA with the under 21.
He seems reluctant, doesn't he? Because he's linked with a lot of jobs and you'd think it would be a shoo-in. You think that'd be a great appointment, but for whatever reason, he hasn't bitten yet.
It's a nice gig, isn't it? St George's Park, a little bit less pressure. He's really enjoying himself, working with some of the country's best young players. Probably a lot of job satisfaction for him there. Yeah, and, you know, he did an okay job, didn't he, really, in charge of the England senior team as a caretaker. So, yeah, maybe he's holding out for a Premier League job. Who knows? Look, Mowbray didn't renew his contract, did he? I know that they didn't really go all out to keep Mowbray, but that was a bit weird because he was doing so well. John Dow Thomason did pretty well, didn't he, for a long time. They sort of just allowed him to walk away, went to the Sweden job, and now Eustace. So, yeah, it's not as attractive a job as you'd imagine, I would suggest, given that record, because those three managers have all done a pretty good job at Rovers. If they get if they get it wrong, you know, things could tumble backwards quite quickly. But yeah, I don't blame Eustace. I get it completely. I just I think the fact that there's a release clause in there was quite interesting, don't you? Like 500 grand, or between that and 750 grand. You know, that we're a team where Rovers basically are happy to sign off on losing a good manager as long as they get that kind of money. I don't think that's a very sensible thing for Rovers to put into a contract, if I'm honest. Because if you've got a really good manager, then surely anyone worth their salt would be prepared to pay that. And then you bang, you've lost your gaffer just like that. So, I don't know.
Clarky, you're in charge of Blackburn this morning. They've won at the Hawthorns and they play Argyle at home next game. Mm. Do you, if they win that game, let it play out with the interim staff in charge to the end of the season, or do you get a front man installed to try and get him in the playoffs the next few days?
Get someone in. Get someone in, I think. Yeah, don't let it drift. Players don't like it, really, do they? Like, it's at first it's quite fun because it's like
supply teacher.
Yeah, supply teacher. Yeah, it's, everyone's a little bit demob happy.
Relaxed. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you get bad habits form. So, yeah, no, get someone in.
As Sam says, Blackburn playing Plymouth at the weekend. First game for John Eustace is away at QPR on Valentine's Day. You're going to be at that, aren't you, Sam?
Indeed, yeah. Pretty much the perfect Valentine's Day, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, we'll ask you about that next week. All right, next today, we're going to have a look ahead to some of the weekend's games. I say the weekend. We are focusing on one game from each division this week, and we're fast-forwarding to Monday night for the big one in the Championship between Leeds United and Sunderland at Elland Road. Leeds pump Watford at Vicarage Road on Tuesday, and we mentioned Sunderland had seen off Luton. Still just the one home league defeat all season for Leeds, Adrian, but this will be as big a test as they've had, potentially.
Yeah, because Sunderland have got good forwards, haven't they? Good midfielders. Yeah, they might... It'd be interesting. I'm interested to hear Sam's take on Sunderland and how they approach this game, because it's the hardest game, isn't it, in the Championship, Leeds away. You've got to fancy them every single time, haven't you? I mean, they're 18-0 up across their last six games, full stop. At home, 13 wins, 2 draws, 1 defeat, plus 35 goal difference. Sunderland, actually, the next closest, with Norwich on plus 16 for their home goal difference. And that tells you the difference. When you consider they let in 3 against Pompey on the first day of the season, you know, that's remarkable to let in 4 in 15 home games. It's just nuts, really. So you would expect Leeds to be overwhelming favourites here. They've been quite lucky with injuries, you've got to say that. But it's the same system every single game. 4-2-3-1. And at the moment, it's kind of almost the same team. You know, you could rattle off the best team. Certainly the best front four. He's made his mind up, hasn't he? It's James, Aronson and Solomon in behind Peru. In midfield, it's Gruev and probably Tanaka now ahead of Rothwell. And then the back four contains Ampadu and Rodon, Firpo and Bogle. You know, this is the team. And they keep churning out good performances, really good performances. Dan James is on fire. Obviously, we know that. I think Joel Pirou's come to the fore as well. Looking at this game tactically, I think fast breaks are going to be quite important. Sunderland have the most efforts on goal from fast breaks of all the teams in the Championship. And you'd imagine they'll have to play on the break in this game. So that makes them really dangerous. But and they've scored 7 goals from breakaways this season. Only one team scored more, and that's Leeds. Leeds have got 10 goals from fast breaks. When you consider how much of the ball Leeds have, that's a real, you know, a real positive, because when they don't have the ball, they're probably even more dangerous, Leeds. And what I love about Leeds is that, yeah, they're great when they have it, but the hunger, a little bit like Burnley, actually, in the game I saw last night, the hunger to win it back quickly is immense. And Leeds, believe it or not, are top for possession one inside the final third, just ahead of Pompey. And that's amazing when you consider that they have the ball a lot of the time. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a cracking game. Don't see it being a bore draw like the Burnley one. I think this one will be more attack focused. And yeah, I would expect Leeds to win the game, because they are absolutely flying. I've given Farker a lot of stick in the past for being a bit of a one-trick pony, but when that trick is working as smoothly and with as much intensity as it is right now, it's a great trick. And it looks like it's going to take them all the way to the Premier League.
Yeah, certainly seems that way. Sunderland, though, Sam, not going to be a walkover. Only one defeat in their last 6 away games, and that was a strange one at Stoke. What? How do you think they're set to get something from this game?
It's fascinating, because if they win, that really puts the cat amongst the pigeons and puts them in with a hell of a shout of automatic promotion. They got Hull at home the next one. It would be an incredible return if they could get back-to-back wins here to back up the 4 points in the last couple of home games. I suppose the only thing tactically is maybe they shore things up a little bit and go with an additional defensive midfielder, or if maybe... Yeah, Bellingham just has to show that side of his game and just sit in there again, alongside Dan Neil, who's been brilliant in recent weeks. I wouldn't be astonished if like Rigg came out and maybe Abdul Samed came in, who's a defensive midfielder who he did put in for the Argyle game recently. Got a little bit of criticism. It was seen to be a little bit negative, but I think in regard to this fixture, you could understand it. My hunch is you go for it. And, you know, Middlesbrough, for example, the other day, won that game 3-2 in a bit of a thriller. I don't know. I think Leeds, as Clarkie has emphasised, counter-attacking the most goals in the division, open play goals the most in the division, 7 at home against Cardiff the other day. We've always said, I think, where Leeds are concerned, they can hurt you by sitting in and breaking fast, and they can also play through a team that sits in. So I'm not sure how they'll go about it. Sunderland, it's whether they want to be bold and make it a bit of a basketball match. That'll be up to the manager. I don't think their situation this season gets greatly affected by a defeat at Elland Road. I think they're going to be in the playoffs. I think that's probably the best they can hope for. So I'd like to see them go for it. And my goodness me, in Enzo Lafee, they've got a player. I didn't realise that was going to rhyme, but my goodness me, he is, if he can start consistently scoring and assisting goals, like I just spoke of Marcus Brown in League Two, Enzo Lafee could prove to be the signing of the Championship season, because his goal and his performances against Luton and in the recent games have been breathtaking. So hopefully he comes to the fore on Monday night.
Yeah, he's on big money, but you'd have to say he's justified Lafee so far. Let's go into League One.
I'm having that. I like that. Yeah.
I just wish they'd signed him on a proper transfer rather than a loan, because it really would have worked. But still, thanks for sticking with me. In League One, Exeter City, so close to stunning Premier League high flyers and two-time European champions Nottingham Forest in the Cup in midweek. On Saturday, back to league business for them as they go to Cambridge, who are bottom, 7 points from safety. Really interesting this, I think, Adrian, that Cambridge have stuck with Gary Monk. Obviously, they got through, what, three managers last season. Monk was appointed on March the 4th. His league record, played 40, won 6.
Oh, dear. That's not good, is it? But they're not rich. They're not a rich club. You know, paying off a manager is not something they maybe want to do. You know, it's obviously a good relationship he's got with the board as well. And that counts for something. And look, Cambridge probably shouldn't be in League One. I think that's probably maybe that's an acceptance on the part of the board that they've done really well to stay in the third tier for as long as they have. And if they do drop out this season, it's no disaster. And they obviously like what he's trying to implement with this sort of 3-4-2-1 shape mainly. He actually went to a back four at Birmingham, which was a bit of a surprise. But yeah, 3-4-2-1's the shape. If you look at all the metrics, and you shouldn't because it's all about results, but you know, it's worth having a little glance at it every now and again, stats-wise. They're a mid-table team in terms of shots and shots faced and all of the different qualities that you look for in a team. They're nowhere near the worst. They're not the best, but they're somewhere in the middle. So at both ends of the pitch, they've struggled this season. They've been a bit, you know, they've given up a lot of goals. According to XG, they've conceded 13 more than they should have done. Now, part of that's on the keeper, maybe, and they've changed the keeper. Maybe you saw this. Vicente Reyes, who they had on loan from Norwich, only 20. Maybe didn't have the best loan spell. He's gone back, and Nathan Bishop is in, who I saw at Southend, and he went to Man United, and he's been various places, including Wickham. He's their fourth goalie of the season, so that tells you that's been a bit of an issue. 15 matches now without a clean sheet as well for Cambridge. What I will say is that this is the sort of match they've dug out wins in. Four of their five wins this season have come at home to teams in the bottom nine, and Exeter are currently in the bottom nine. So let's see. I think this has to, if they've got any chance of staying up, and I don't give them much chance, they have to win this game. They definitely have to win it. They have only lost two of their last six, so there's little signs they're getting there. But I think a draw is not really going to do them too many favours here. They have to go for it. So let's see. Let's see if they've got what it takes.
What about Exeter then, Sam? You could look at it two ways, I suppose, can't you? You could say, well, maybe it'll give them a boost that they pushed one of the outstanding teams in English football all the way to penalties on Tuesday night. I mean, we were talking about penalties earlier. There's just a massive contrast in the quality of penalties from Premier League teams to League One teams, isn't there? That's something that you do notice or not a lot. But back into league business, Exeter lost 6 of their last 7. And they've had to play, I mean, it wasn't even 120 minutes, was it? The game didn't finish till nearly 11 o'clock at night. So it's not perfect preparation for this one for them.
Well, they should be hugely boosted because I thought they were brilliant. And I think that would have been the the feeling of the supporters who created a great atmosphere in this game. I'm completely with you about the penalties, actually. I didn't like the lack of smiles from the Nottingham Forest players as they strolled back to the halfway line. Blase. Come
big
on,
time.
Enjoy
it. Big time, Charlie. All your penalties? I'm not sure about
you
that.
Still smile. Still clench the fist, don't you, Clarkey? Irrelevant of the opposition.
I think so. They were obviously just fuming at themselves that they took it that far, weren't they?
No, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Arrogant club. Only joking, mate. I did notice that the quality of the penalties, and interesting that Ed Turns gets sent off. I think that was a debut, and Angus McDonald missed the penalty. So they've strengthened in that department. And they needed to. I mean, Matt, you saw them, didn't you, recently against Leyton Orient when they shipped six. They conceded four against Stevenage last time out. Not one in eight, conceded 23 in that time, nearly conceding three per match. So, yeah, there's only really Mansfield who are competing with Exeter at the moment as the worst team in the division. That's the fact. And this is a massive game, which they won in the reverse fixture, 1-0. At home. I think they've got some talented young players, attacking players. They've brought some in during the window, but reliance on McGuinness, we saw it the other night, three of their top four scorers no longer at the club this season have left. Ali, obviously, the most obvious one, who had nine before departing for Luton. So there's not loads of goals. Hopefully, defensively, they're going to be more resolute with the additions. I see this being low scoring, tense affair, and Exeter obviously have concerns. Clearly going to be looking over their shoulders, and Cambridge, you know, in equally desperate form. So massive game at the weekend.
Big one down in League Two as well. Two teams down on their luck, trying to change their fortunes on Saturday. Tranmere welcome MK Dons to Prenton Park. Nigel Adkins has been busy quoting Abraham Lincoln back here in 2025. His team are placing 4 points above the relegation zone. Quite obvious to see where their main defect is, Sam. They've scored the fewest goals in the division, and they're rubbish at home too. 5 wins in the last 19 in the league at Prenton Park. It's easy to understand why some Rovers supporters are hoping for a change of manager.
Fewest goals in the EFL. Only Southampton scored fewer in the top four divisions. Amari Patrick, I think, has been the one contributing in those terms early part of the season anyway, with six, not scored in nine appearances, but was bright last time out against Fleetwood, where they were at least, you know, more resolute, looked more cohesive. I think him and Josh Davison had particularly good games. These are decent pedigree players, you know, that have just not produced for Tranmere this season. Luke Norris back on the bench the last couple of games. I'd expect him to feature more regularly as they search to improve on their goal scoring. But it's been a desperate time for them, you know, especially in the scoring stakes. They brought in Jake Garrett from Blackburn. He was on loan at Bristol Rovers, a midfield player, just to give them a few more, a different option there, sorry. But yeah, it's been a real struggle for them. I think you will get a little bit of a contrast in this game. I expect Tranmere to strip it back a little bit, and MK Dons will obviously want to dominate the ball. But it's looking, you know, like it's going to be a real scrap for Tranmere. But I think with the quality of player that they've got in the squad, they'll probably have enough to remain in division, and I would expect their victories to come at Prenton Park. They beat Walsall there early part of the season. They've got it in them to spring a surprise. But my goodness me, it's been a season that has hugely, I think, taken everyone by surprise. They've massively underperformed.
And you'd say the same, Clarkie, about MK in recent times, wouldn't you? Really fallen off a cliff. I mean, I feel like all we're doing today is talking about teams who've been rubbish, but you put MK in that category, right? Three defeats on the spin, 6 of 8.
Yeah, I think, nine in 13 they've lost. You know, they're 15th. I keep thinking, oh, MK, they'll definitely be in the playoffs. But now you're thinking, probably not. I mean, they're not going to go down or anything like that, but it's been really disappointing. Big turnaround in sort of playing personnel, haven't they? Obviously, had different manager last year as well. Since the end of last season, that horrible playoff semi-final defeat to Crawley, they've added 21 new players. In January, 8 came in, 14 went. So, you know, it's a big old turnover. And I look at the names and I love what I'm seeing. It's a great team. And they've got Hogan and Hendry up top at the moment, Liam Kelly at the top of the diamond, Jay Williams at the base, Dan Crowley and Alex Gilby, the box-to-box guys, Aussie on the bench. I mean, this is a team that should be really top three, but they don't know each other. Really? And that I think is part of the problem. They've been a bit of a soft touch, I think that's fair to say. Nowhere near enough clean sheets. But I just believe that when it clicks, they'll be great. And it might be that Scott Lindsay just needs a pre-season with the team to get them going. You know, it might be too late this season. I do think once they get a win or two, they might go on a streaky run and challenge potentially just to sneak in the playoffs. But for me, it's probably about next season now, which is such a horrible thing to say in mid-Feb. You know, it's a long, long way, August, isn't it? But I do think that they've got the players now, because a lot of these players, these signings, are on good deals now, that where they won't have to change much in the summer. They're all here next year. It's just they're strangers at the moment, and that's the issue. I think they're good enough to go into Tranmere and win comfortably, but you know, recent form tells you that it's not that easy.
Well, we'll find out at the weekend. Right, we are rattling through the show, nearly finished, but we're going to do predictions and tweet before we go. Last week's predictions now then. So there's a bit of controversy here, because I predicted that Newcastle would beat Birmingham after extra time. Obviously they did beat them. I mean realistically, Clarkie, I can't have a point for that, can I? Because the result at 90 minutes would have been a draw.
Yeah, I think if you call an extra time win, you're really predicting the draw, aren't you? It wasn't.
Fine.
It's harsh, but I think, Sam, are you with me?
I've no idea what you're talking about, but considering the cushion I've got at the top of the division, he can have as many points as he likes.
All right, well, look, I'll take one. You two got two last week. So, I mean, nobody yet, exactly.
It's 10 clear. 45 to Sam, 35 to me. You're on 28, Matt. So, yeah, look, just a few on the nose, I tell you, and everything changes.
All right, I am the MK Dons then of the Prediction League. Let's go through our games this week. From the champ, I've picked out Hull City against Norwich. Adrian, what do you think is going to happen?
I saw Hull and, yeah, didn't have a lot of threat up front. Got terrible home form. Norwich have won 1-0 at Cov, Watford and Luton this season, and they're going to go to Hull and win 1-0 again.
Okay, what do you reckon, Sam?
Just going to back him with a result so he doesn't get the march on me. Yeah, I quite fancy Norwich here. And what has annoyed me the last few weeks is when you go for one team not to score and then you're out of it quite early doors. So I'm going to go for both teams to score. I'm going to go for Norwich to win 2-1 just to keep it interesting for me when the results are coming in.
All right, I've got 0-0. For this one. I've also got 0-0 for our next game, which is Reading against Rotherham.
Strategic. From Matthew.
I've seen Reading and Rotherham are not in good form. So yeah, goalless at the Select Car Leasing Stadium for me in that one. Sam, what do you reckon?
Low scoring. 2-1 Reading.
Okay. Home victory. What do you reckon, Adrian?
I had 2-1 written down. I think Reading are good at home. Rotherham don't score many away. I'm going to have to go 1-0 then. 1-0 to Reading.
You can have first dibs then, Clarkey, on Gillingham against Crewe.
Oh, thanks, mate. Gillingham haven't won since December the 14th. Can you believe it? It's not going well for them. But I think this could be the day. It's been a rough old week for Crewe. I'm not saying they've hit the wall, but they're not playing that well. I'm going to go for Gillingham to get that long-awaited first win under Coleman. Gillingham 2, Crewe 0.
Allows me to do my standard not-so-solid Crewe line at least. Sam, what you got for this one?
I'm just checking in. Crewe lost at 3-0 at home to Newport as well. Not great for them. I'm going to go for them to get back on the horse. That red card was bizarre, wasn't it, AFC Wimbledon? We didn't touch on that earlier. You rarely see that, someone pulling down someone from a header where they were going to get a position where they were going to get a free header away and getting a penalty given and a red card. So played a long time with 10 men. 1-1. I think they're good for it. 1-1. A little bit of a response.
That's what I had as well, because I wanted to go for three draws. But let's change it up. Let's say that this is going to be, you know what, I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to say there'll be goals, 2-2. Why not? We shall see how we get on with those next week. Before we go, let me remind you that our partners, Quinbet, have a new offer. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for more information on responsible gambling. Before we go, a tweet of the week to finish. It's probably not a standout one. It comes from Jordan Brown of Leighton Orient. But I just wanted to get your opinion on an aspect of it, please, chap. Sam, you can go first. Back to winning ways, praise emoji. At Ethan Galbraith, unplayable, applause emoji. It's tagging in a teammate for praise that I wondered about. How does that go down in the dressing room?
I think that's quite nice.
Yeah.
It's normally they're taking the plaudits for themselves, so that's quite refreshing to see. I would suggest. I would hasten to add, I bet he had a good game as well, Jordan Brown. Let's not get away from that. I'd imagine he was back at it, but I think that's a nice thing to respect Ethan Galbraith, despite him probably saying it in a dressing room. But to see it in print's lovely as well.
We'd love to know the background of this reply from Sean Clarkey, who says, great to see you on the score sheet, Jordan. I owe you a mixed grill.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I mean, I've got nothing to offer. I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, you might as well take her up on it. No doubt about it. I've got a slightly more cynical take. I agree with you. It's a really nice thing to do. But Ethan Galbraith, he's a midfielder. He's a centre mid who's playing at right back at the moment. And where does Jordan play? Centre mid. So what he's doing here, even though he's saying, what a brilliant right back you are, mate. What brilliant. Keep it going. You're superb in that position. Mm-hmm. And it keeps his slot a little bit safer inside the engine room, doesn't it?
Clever. All right. So there was a reason behind tagging his pal in. Good stuff. All right. That's where we're going to leave it for today. Hope you have a good weekend if you go into a game or otherwise. Thanks to Adrian and Sam, as ever, for their expertise. We'll be back with another pod for you same time next week. Bye for now.